their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado, this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And welcome to another episode of the Image Doctors Photography Podcast.
Once remote again, edition.
Yep, coming to you from isolation in beautiful Colorado, USA. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing fine. I'm still getting outdoors at times, which is nice.
Good. Yeah, I go for a walk just about every day when I can in the open space. So.
Yeah, my wife and I did a nice walk slash hike over at Garden of the Gods. You know, why not?
Hey, as long as it's not too crowded, that's good.
It was. We used a secret locals parking spot that I mentioned to you.
Oh, okay.
You know, I won't mention what it is, but right. It's because it's secret, but it worked wonderfully.
Right on.
And it was really pretty there.
So,
took some bad photos because it was midday. Hey,
you know, I've decided I'm trying to think of what I'm going to do during the weekends, and it's like, you know, I think I'm going to do a photo walk in my own house, but it needs to be a macro photo walk, like close-ups and stuff. So just explore things. It might just be dirt on my kitchen counter for all you know, but
I think that could be interesting if you do it right.
Yeah. So today, we're going to talk about white balance, right?
And
before we do that, we have an announcement, correct?
Correct.
Okay. We're just deciding to have, you know, cause we're all cooped up, right? Everybody is mostly stuck inside. If you're either working from home or if you are essential, we thank you for continuing to do that. Friday, April 17th, we're going to have a little happy hour get together over, teleconference, video chat.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Just for fun.
Just for fun, for free. We're bored.
So we'll put this on our Facebook page. We'll create an event for this. There'll be a login that you'll get when you register. I'll set up a registration link. It's going to be from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern, U.S. Eastern time on April 17th. Just happy hour with Jason and Rick, me and you.
And we realize that won't align with happy hour time everywhere in the globe.
Including us.
We're sacrificing ourselves a little bit here, but hopefully it'll be fun. And yeah, I think we'll put it in the registration too. But if any of our listeners who are in time zones around the world where that's a bad time, but you're interested in doing something like that in the future, just let us know. Let us know where you are. And you know, we can do a morning coffee for us or you know, something like that, a future date. Happy to do that, and we would enjoy it.
Yeah, cool. So that'll be fun. So look for that on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/imagedoctors, and we'll post an event with a link where you can sign up. So that'll be fun. So back to what we're really going to talk about today, which is white balance, right? You know, it's probably one of the most it's one of those interesting settings because it's critical for a lot of things, depending how you set it, because it really creates a tremendous emotional, psychological impact on your photos. In terms of just things looking right or things having mood. But we want to talk about what it is first. And I think you had it best. We were talking about this before we started the show today. Let's go back to film.
Right. And I know this generally works well with our audience demographics. Lots of people shot with film at some point, whether it was just for a short period or a long period. And a helpful thing to think about is if you were shooting slide film, chances are you were shooting with a fixed daylight white balance in effect. Mm-hmm. You know, it was intended to look right and give you whites and gray grays, if you were in daylight conditions. But there was also a variety of slide film made, and it wasn't used a lot by most people, but it was tungsten balanced. So it was for indoor lighting with incandescent bulbs and stuff like that,
Right.
stuff that would make daylight slide film look very orange. But that was essentially like a different white balance setting. And I think it's easy to envision why the daylight white balance setting can look good for lots of other conditions, but you get into severely overcast conditions and it starts getting kind of bluish, and some of that is okay because it can reflect the actual mood, but it starts getting kind of wrong. And then color print film was different, and it's closer to raw files, at least from the white balance aspect, in that you didn't buy daylight color negative film or tungsten color negative film. You bought color negative film, and the color adjustments happened in the dark room or its equivalent, and you either adjusted settings on your color enlarger, dials, or you would actually stick color filters in a little tray and try to get the colors right by warming or cooling or whatever. And the same kind of thing happens with digital. It's just done differently. It's done with a white balance setting in your camera or in your post-processor.
So there used to be tremendous talk about white balance when digital first started becoming popular, because it was a setting that you never really thought about when you were shooting film. Especially, like you said, if you're shooting color print film, you just sent those off to wherever. They made it whatever adjustment necessary, and generally it would look okay, other than extreme things. And the problem that we have, so digital cameras are great. They allow us to really set a wide range of color temperatures as well as tints, to get creative or otherwise. But how much of that is really necessary? Because again, like you mentioned, if you shoot in raw, you have to really screw up your white balance setting before you can't fix it in post. And that's critical. So when you're going to set your white balance, I mean, we can talk about, the mechanism, but usually there's a white balance button somewhere on your camera, and you can choose between usually three types of white balance. You can choose from an automatic, the camera tries to figure it out, auto white balance setting. And over the years, those have evolved to not only get more accurate, but also give you more options for the way colors get handled. We can talk about that. And then there's something called the preset white balance setting. So that's like your daylight, your cloudy, your shade. Fluorescent, tungsten, those kinds of settings. And then lastly, there's one called Direct Kelvin, which many cameras have, where you can just dial in a color temperature setting on your own. And that's just a fixed, that allows you to get more creative. Now,
You've forgotten about the other one, though.
which one did I miss now?
It's the
Oh,
one that we plan
the
to
custom
talk about.
preset.
Yeah,
Yes,
exactly.
make a custom
Because that's
preset.
a powerful one,
Right,
potentially.
where you would make a white balance reading on your own, a custom preset based off usually like a gray card or something like that, a
Yeah,
white
usually
balance
gray or
area.
white.
Right, and you can do that as well. Now, that's all
And we'll
great.
come back to that later.
Yeah, and that's all great, but I think when it comes down to practical matters, where should most people set their white balance? Again, if you're shooting raw, a lot of times you're going to have a tremendous amount of leeway to fix the white balance or make adjustments to it in post. And I like to tell my workshop students that you don't have to be spot on, you just have to be in the neighborhood. So, again, you have to look at the light that you're dealing with. And the other thing is, and we'll talk about this too, is that unless you're shooting strictly outdoors or in a controlled studio setting with one light source, you almost will always have different light sources. You will get mixed white balance scenarios. You know, imagine you're shooting indoors where you've got possibly tungsten or fluorescent lighting, but there's a window and there's daylight coming in. You have decisions that you have to make. So what do you know, those are some of the challenges that you might face with white balance. Now, when it comes to, well, I mean, let me ask you, I mean, most of the time, how do you set your white balance
If
in your
I'm,
camera?
yeah, if I'm shooting outdoors and it's, reasonably sunny out, I will set the camera on a fixed daylight setting. And the one little nuance I'll say is I usually dial in a little bit of additional warmth beyond that. And I don't know if that's because where we live, in the altitude, I might do something different if I lived in Florida or California, perhaps. But that's usually what I do. And different cameras allow you to do that differently. But you
Right.
can almost always adjust the white balance and make it slightly warmer than it would be or slightly cooler. Sometimes I'll use the Kelvin scale because it allows me to do the same thing pretty directly. And then
Right.
if I'm shooting indoors or in situations where the light is very different than daylight, I'll often use some variety of auto white balance.
Okay.
And
That's
it's just a
interesting.
matter then of do I want to completely neutralize whites and make whites white, or do I want to leave in a little bit of warmth? And with today's cameras, doesn't matter the brand, most of them offer different auto white balance settings that will, do those things for you and
Right.
pretty well these days.
Right. So, for example, there used to just be auto white balance. And auto white balance used to be pretty good for most outdoor settings, and it would fall apart as things got more towards the tungsten spectrum. That's not the case so much anymore. It's much, much better.
Yeah, and the other thing I found too is those older auto white balance settings often didn't handle warm, golden hour light very well.
Yes.
They
Well,
often tried to make it go away.
right. And that's an interesting thing, and I'm going to loop back to that because that's a good point. So, like, I'm with you. When I'm outside in any kind of daylight scenario, my camera either is on fixed sunny slash daylight, whatever you want to call it, you know, whatever your camera's terminology calls it, or I'm on auto, and Nikon has an auto daylight, you know, daylight biased auto. That sometimes works. Where it falls apart is when you get in, like you mentioned, into the extreme parts of the day. So if you're shooting at twilight, at blue hour, or at sunset, maybe in golden hour or sunrise, an auto setting can sometimes neutralize those warm tones in ways that you don't like.
Or the really good cool ones, like you were
Right,
mentioning
or
with
the blue
Blue Hour.
tones. And I find that a fixed daylight white balance in those scenarios tends to be my starting point because it'll either be way too blue, but I'll fix it, or way too orange and I'll fix it, but it preserves those tones and instead of neutralizing them out. And it just saves me time in post because, again, like I said, it's like I tell my students, it's being in the right neighborhood. And what happens a lot of the times is that if you have something auto and it's neutralized, you're looking at your photo and you don't even realize that it's neutralized these colors. And so maybe you
No,
don't
and
adjust it in the way that you might have wanted to otherwise.
or what happens in, I know this used to happen to me a lot, is I would make some shot that I thought was pretty cool because blue hour, warm golden light, and it might be a little while before I was able to work with that image. It could be weeks.
Right.
I was traveling somewhere and I would just look at the images and go, well, those are boring. I don't know why I took those and just skip over them, where they actually did have some interesting light, interesting colors. But because I was using an auto white balance, it would just make it go away and I would ignore the photo that really could have been good. So that's why I started moving toward the fixed settings. And so it's more a mental reminder to me of what the image or what the scene looked like. That's why I do it.
And one example where you might choose, say, a direct Kelvin setting is for things like twilight or even night photography, where a white balance in the 3000, you know, 3500, 3300 Kelvin temperature range gives you those really midnight blue skies that you like. And you get that look kind of dialed in. Now, again, you can just adjust it, but it puts you in the right neighborhood. Now, you know, those are for situations where you can kind of identify the type of lighting that you have. One example, and if anyone's ever our listeners will probably know this, but like one really great example is if you're shooting indoors in fluorescent lighting, right? Mm-hmm. And if you did that with slide or print film with daylight balance, you know, everything would look green. You know, the fluorescent tubes are missing some of the magenta part of the color balance. Mm-hmm. And so that, and your eye doesn't see it. It looks normal to your eye, but then when you get your pictures back. And way back in the mid to late 80s, when I was shooting for my yearbook and I had to shoot candid shots of like indoor classrooms, which mm-hmm. were all just those fluorescent tubes, I would always use a flash. And the reason I would use a flash was because that would be my primary light source. The fluorescent tubes might look a little green, but that was okay. It would be good enough for the publications that we were doing. Everything else would look all right. But there's times where you just don't really know what the color temperature is, and that's where something like a gray card or a white. There's different tools where you can take a photo of a gray card in the lighting. I've done this in arenas where you get really strange halogen vapor lamps. Mm-hmm. So I'll take a custom white balance, following the instructions in the user manual to take a photo of the gray card. It creates a custom white balance. It might not be perfect, but it, again, puts me in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And so that's creating a custom preset in the camera when you do that.
Yeah.
The other way that you can do that too, which I know you know about, mm-hmm. is to use a thing like an expo disc. Mm-hmm. This is something that I have somewhere. I honestly don't do it often, but it's a diffusing filter that goes on the front of your lens. It's translucent, but you know, it's not clear
right. It's just a translucent cover. In mm-hmm. fact, you can do this with like a flash dome almost, you know, something mm-hmm. Once upon a time we reviewed the old Gary Fong light sphere. You can put that over your lens.
Yeah, you could probably even put a white coffee filter over.
I know people who've done that actually.
Yeah, and do that, and it would be fine.
Don't use a brown coffee filter.
No, not this.
Or a used coffee filter, that's right out.
Yeah, let's just skip that. Coffee grounds are not good on the front of your lens. But that can enable you to set a custom preset in the camera. And then as long as your light isn't changing dramatically, you'll get a bunch of good shots. I tend to gravitate, you know, in those awkward lighting situations to using a little gray card. I've even got, you know, we've talked about the Weibel brand, Whibal. They make one that is small enough to go on a keychain.
Yeah,
and so I've seen this. I have one of those on my keychain, and that way, if I'm out somewhere where I've driven, guess what I have with me is a little gray card. And where I find that helpful, one, if I'm doing indoor portraits, I find it to be really, really helpful. And I'll adjust the white balance in the RAW processor, you know, by usually the little color picker thing, so that it's neutralized. And then usually I'll dial in a little bit of warmth beyond that.
So you're just the temperature slider mm-hmm. in Lightroom or wherever you're using it.
Right.
Whatever tool.
Right. Yeah. And the Most other thing I find is if I'm shooting macro stuff and I'm mm-hmm. under a lot of tree cover, mm-hmm. I find it really helpful there. And in both cases, it can be a little bit hard just doing it visually. You know, mm-hmm. the combination of the color temperature and the tint slider, it's just hard to get it quite right. By doing that, I get very close, and then it's very easy just to make it a little bit warmer or cooler. So those are the circumstances where I use those tools a lot.
Now, and your point about under tree cover is huge, because if you're under a, you know, if the light's coming through leaves, green leafy trees, that light's going to have a green hue to it, and you may or may not be able to compensate for that. Your photos might look weird. So a gray card might help, and just again dialing it in. And for those of you who use post-processing on RAW, you know, one thing, if you take the first picture with either a gray card, a color checker card can be fun for portraits, because those have different patches, slightly different tints, to warm things up or cool them down. And then you can take that white balance from that image of the gray card and just synchronize or copy paste that white balance setting to all the remaining photos in that sequence.
It is such a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it's really easy.
It is fantastic.
So that's what we do. Now, you know,
and it's amazing what kind of effect it has.
Yeah.
All of a sudden your colors just jump out at you, and things look considerably better. Not just slightly, considerably.
Well, and here's something that's interesting to know. I mean, there's two reasons why you want to get, you know, the definition of the right white balance depends on what you're going for. Now, if you're shooting products, for example, where the colors need to be, you know, certain way, you know, and you really want to have neutral gray tones and whites, then this direct Kelvin method based on your light source or a custom preset or whatever you might have done is really important, you know, whether you do it in post or in the camera. When you start talking about creative, you know, especially outdoor or portraits, sometimes neutralizing those colors isn't what you're trying to do.
Right.
A warm look where the white balance is more orange, it gives a warmer feel, a psychologically different feel than a cooler look. And there are certain things that are tricky. A sunset, for example, even when I take it with, especially if it's like a silhouette where the photo is really just the sky, neutralizing those orange tones is not what I'm trying to go for. I will oftentimes really crank the white balance over onto the orange side. To just make it look more dramatic, especially with something like silhouettes. It just intensifies your sky. The same is true if you want a more of a cold look, a cool, you know, if you're trying to impart a mood to your image, those blues can be important. So getting the right look, you know, it's not about getting everything exact. It can be about using different white balance settings to look good, like cityscapes and night. Sometimes I'll dial in a little magenta. There used to be an old trick of using an FL1, a fluorescent filter. Remember fluorescent?
Sure.
Missing, right? So you'd put a magenta filter on your camera or on your lens, and that provides just a little bit of pop, and it just makes those colors look. It's great for cityscapes and nighttime scenes.
Yeah, agree.
And you can do that now with just the magenta slider in your temperature tool in post, or like you mentioned, a lot of cameras let you customize the white balance setting. If you go into a particular white balance, say, you know, tungsten, and you want to warm it up or make it more magenta, you can do that depending on the camera. Like on the Nikons, there's a little axis with the orange blue axis and then a green magenta axis, and you can just, you know, move that little little spot around.
And without dwelling on it, I will throw out one little tip or subtlety. And like a lot of things, this depends. But if you use a Nikon and do exactly what you said, every RAW processor I know of will read that white balance setting correctly, including the adjustments that you've made.
Right.
If you use a Fuji, maybe, maybe not.
Okay, interesting.
At least some of the RAW processors out there, and this includes Lightroom and Adobe Camera Raw, will not see those adjustments. So if you warmed up a daylight preset in camera, all it will see is daylight.
Interesting.
At least with the cameras that they've made to date, and I would have to check their very recent ones, but it's the vast majority of them. So it's just a weird thing, and it has to do, I think, with where those settings are stored in the file and God knows what. But some raw processors will read it correctly, some will not. So if, and we don't want to go into a explanation of every camera brand, but if you're using something that isn't a Nikon, do your own little experiment and see what happens, just so you know.
Well, and again, it's easy to fix. If you end up just warming things up and post a little bit, just do it. Don't sweat this. This is one of those.
I mention it just for people that end up scratching their heads because they tried doing what we talked about and it doesn't seem to work, except for JPEGs.
Now I want to change gears in the time we have left and just talk about a couple of things like common mistakes and also tricky white balance. The biggest mistake that I see people making with their white balance is shooting outdoors and setting their white balance to cloudy because there's a cloud in the sky. And it's like, well, no. And then they come back and they look at all their photos and they go, gosh, my skies look kind of blah.
Yeah.
And we change it back to daylight and all of a sudden skies become blue and everybody is happy. So as a general rule of thumb, for me, at least when doing landscapes, again, the reason why I set it to my camera to daylight preset or daylight auto is, again, to make my skies blue. Everything else I can figure out later. But if the sky isn't right, people are going to look at your photo weird. It's just not going to seem correct. And I'm talking about normal blue skies, not like sunsets or sunrises or that kind of stuff.
I completely agree. And related to that, everyone has done this, you know, especially when they were new to digital photography. Do not try to create a sunset with white balance where there was no sunset, you know, where there was no color. You know, it's one thing if there were colors there, they were just, you know, a little bit on the subtle side, you can enhance those a little. And it'll still be okay, but it never works to create something out of nothing. It looks weird. You may not realize it because you got too close to the photo working with it, but everyone else go, what the hell? Are you on Mars? That doesn't look right.
Well, sometimes that's the look you want, I suppose.
But, yeah, it could be.
I think it goes back to something we've talked about before, which is the majority of colors preset, you know, like whether it's color profile, I don't mean color profiles, but like camera style profiles and preset white balances were, again, intended for people shooting JPEGs who needed to have an out of the camera image that pretty much got it correct. Okay. So once you go to RAW, again, it's not about, it's about being in the neighborhood. So I just treat it just like I shot with film. I figured, well, if I was shooting daylight slide film, I'd get this look. And I like that look. Shadows look kind of bluish, but skies look correct, that sort of thing. The other thing, though, is mixed white balance. And we alluded to that earlier. Now, this is a big, what do you do when there's more than one light source? That room that has incandescent and daylight. What do you do? Because there's no real answer there.
There's a few options.
But there's you make compromises.
Yeah, sometimes, and this was a really, really useful feature that was added to the majority of RAW processors a few years back. And that's the idea of being able to do local white balance adjustments, where you actually make things warmer or cooler in a certain area, and it's an honest to God white balance adjustment. It's not just throwing a color filter on top of it, which you can only take so far. And sometimes in mixed lighting, I'm able to pull that off if the boundary between the two color regions is easy to deal with. Sometimes it's just too complicated, and then I resort to convert it to black and white.
Right. Well, so let me back up just a little bit. What I like to do in a mixed white balance situation is to first say, what's my dominant subject and my light source, and set my camera's white balance to match that. So if I'm indoors under mostly tungsten white balance, then I'm going to set it to incandescent slash tungsten and figure the rest out. And then if I can't adjust the other areas locally, and a lot of times I'll just say, okay, so my foreground was in shade, it's a little bluish, I'm going to just warm that up with a brush a little bit, just add a little warmth. If that doesn't work, then what you just said is really great. Go to black and white or something like that, because if there's no color, you don't have to worry about color temperature. This can be really useful for things like night shots under those mercury vapor lamps, those hideous orange lamps.
Those are hard.
You know, and it's really tough to get a good white balance. So go to black and white. It can be, it's not only fun, but it's creative, and you can also make your shot have a lot of drama and impact when you go that way.
Yeah, definitely.
So
one thing that you kind of hinted at, and it's another example of a local white balance thing being helpful. A lot of times if you're shooting landscapes, you want to get the sky correct. But let's say you've got a blue sky, but when you set the white balance for that, the foreground and stuff just looks too cool, and it's just not attractive. A little bit of warming up in the foreground with a brush is a wonderful technique. Resist the temptation to crank the white balance up globally
to a
higher setting. That's how you get in trouble in the salmon-colored skies.
Right.
So that local adjustment is good. The other thing I was thinking about, because it is an alternative way of setting the white balance, but I don't recommend it at all these days, is a color temperature meter. Those were really useful in the past if you were shooting slide film and you were trying to figure out what kind of filtration to put on your camera. You know, it could be like the fluorescent filter, and then there were a whole set of filters you could get for, you know, subtle adjustments either way, and a color temperature meter could help you a lot with slide film. I remember seeing a few years ago some guys who I think were just very fascinated by color temperature meters using them with digital cameras, and they were shooting raw, and my reaction was, why are you doing that? Right. Why are you spending $1,000 on a color temperature meter when all you have to do is put a little cheap $15 gray card or a white or a piece of paper in the photo and do what we talked about earlier? And I remember the reaction I got was just silence. But it was like, well, they're fun to use.
You know,
we don't recommend those.
When you were mentioning this, there was one other thing, and I don't do this a lot either, but it is one thing that we should probably mention, and that is setting white balance with flash. And this is a digital thing, because with film, like I mentioned earlier, I use the flash indoors because that was the primary light source, and flashes are basically daylight balance. There might be, you know, a little nuance
pretty
there,
close,
but they're close to daylight. So you could set your camera on daylight, be using a flash. But if you were shooting indoors under fluorescent, primary fluorescent lighting using a flash, what people will do, and if you've got a larger flash unit, sometimes they will come with these little gels, these filter gels that go over the flash. There'll be an orange one for tungsten and a green one for fluorescent. And the idea behind those is not to, you know, I mean, you could use them, I suppose, creatively, that's true. And there's a lot of guys that are way smarter than us who do that creative flash stuff. But the idea would be, if you're in a room that has predominantly fluorescent light, if you introduce your flash as fill light, is not the primary source, you've automatically got a white balance mismatch. You're going to have daylight flash, and then you're going to have tungsten or fluorescent bulbs. So what you would do is you would use the gel on your flash to change its temperature color to greenish or orange, and then set your camera's white balance to match the room. So if you're under fluorescent lighting, you'd use that green gel, set your camera to fluorescent white balance, And then everything would have the same, presumably more or less neutralized light. Same would go for tungsten. You'd use the orange gel. So that's the only other thing I could think of.
No,
We
no.
don't shoot a
That's
lot that way, but that is something that you can do.
no, but that's a really good addition. And I do it on occasion, and it works great because it is a way of handling that mismatch that you were talking about.
And then you can use that deliberately in creative ways. And if you're interested in that, I would say, I think both of us would say, take a look at what Dave Black does. Take a look at what Joe McNally does. Take a look at what our friend David Tejada does. These guys use Flash creatively all the time, where you're using it to deliberately using it to make mixed lighting that looks cool, like a dark blue sky, but a naturally colored, natural tint, warm subject. That's a really
It's
cool
a
technique.
wonderful, very cool look. You don't want to overuse it, but it can be quite powerful.
So I think that's
I think
quite
that's
balanced
enough.
from B to from I would say from A to Z, but I would say from tungsten to incandescent to daylight or and beyond. So thanks again. Don't forget, we'll be joining you live for anyone who wants to come and hang out with us April 17th, 4 p.m. Eastern. Look for the sign up in
Oh,
link. And oh yeah, go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to say there's one other thing that we need to mention too.
Oh, okay.
But, definitely look for the announcement that you were talking about. The other thing is, because of all the fun going on with coronavirus, we made the decision recently to cancel the workshop that we were going to do in
Oh,
Colorado
true.
Springs here in mid-May. The timing is awkward. We didn't want to push anyone into coming to it that didn't feel comfortable at that time. So, yeah, we refunded all the tuition and canceled it, and we hope to do it again in the future, but we'll just see how things develop
Let's say we
when
want
that
to
might
do it,
be.
and it's our intent. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. We forgot about that, and those such are the times in which we live. But hopefully, we'll see some folks online joining us on the 17th of April. And again, just sign up. We'll be available. The link will be in the Image Doctors Facebook page. So
It
until
will.
next time, happy shooting.
All right. Bye-bye.